To begin with, Sue, I read your book, and you know, it's one of those that it's hard to put down.
Well, good.
So I'm wondering, how did you go from being a journalist and a theater reviewer to being a mystery writer?
Well, actually, it's the other way around. When I started out as a kid, what I wanted to do was write books and mysteries. And I thought, you can't exactly go to college to become a mystery writer. Mm. So I went to college to become a journalist because I read someplace that Mark Twain said the best place to learn to write was writing for a newspaper. And so I educated myself to write for a newspaper. And I was only going to do it for a couple years and then, you know, spin off and write books. But darn it, I got hooked on writing for newspapers and spent almost 40 years writing for newspapers.
But newspaper writing can be very different. I wonder what Mark Twain, what his thoughts were there. For one thing, yes, it'll keep you on a deadline. It'll keep you focused on, you know, the who, what, where, when. But aren't you also, as a journalist, taught to not overdo it with adjectives, not get all poetic about it? How did that intertwine for you? Was it an easy switch back and forth?
Well, you know, actually, it's not that difficult. And I most of the time worked in the features department where we are allowed a little bit more levity.
True.
I guess leeway is a better word. We're allowed a little more leeway in using adjectives and descriptions. But you have to be very particular about the words you choose. You can't go on and on. If two words or one word will make the point clear, why write two paragraphs? Mm. And newspapers, you have to be very clear in your word choice. And I think that's a good lesson. A lot of people say they can see that in my books, that it is a newspaper writing, that it is more clear and concise because I don't have pages and pages of description, because I'm more frugal with the words that I use. But hopefully there's enough words there to describe what's necessary.
That's true. And I think I was probably aware as I read your new book, too, but hard to tell because I knew you were a journalist. and probably being a mystery author works the best because that one really is very keep to the facts. So tell us a little bit, our listeners, give us a tease here about Full Moon Friday, your newest book.
Full Moon Friday, like I said, I worked for newspapers for about 40 years. And every now and then, we would have a day when everything would go wrong, when the police reports would be bizarre, and we'd get these phone calls from people asking us the strangest questions. And invariably, somebody would say, what is it, a full moon Friday? I mean, no, they'd say, what is it, a full moon? Mm-hmm. And they would say that, no matter what phase the moon was in, we would always blame the full moon when things would go wrong. And that kind of what inspired me to write Full Moon Friday, just create something about this phenomenon where people, we like to blame the full moon or Friday the 13th when things go wrong. We like to think there's something to blame, and so we do. And so I just combined all the crazy things that go wrong into one day.
One of the main stories in this one is about this school bus with a bunch
sure.
of children on it. Did that have any basis in reality?
It does and it doesn't. When I wrote it, it had no basis in reality. It was just something that came to my head and scared me to death. So I just wrote it. But then when I got to researching it, I found out that there actually was a case where a school bus was kidnapped full of kids and how it was found and everything. So I found out it happened many years ago in the 1970s, I think. When I wrote it, I had no idea it had ever happened, but it turns out that it really did happen somewhere.
Wow. How did the real story end? I won't ask you to give up the other one.
Well, that was what got it. It was buried. They buried it. They buried the bus, and it was dug out, and the people they did survive. But
you hinted at that in the book
scary
too.
Part.
Yeah.
So there was a case in which this happened, for me, it was just something I thought of, and it was so scary, the thought of a school bus full of kids being missing, being abducted. It was so scary that for when I was working on this, when I would drive down the street and see a school bus, I would start crying because it just, It just scared me to death what I was thinking. What my brain was thinking scared me.
So you scare yourself when you're writing, huh?
Yes, I do sometimes.
Tell us a little bit more about your background, Sue. We've been talking about journalism, but you wrote for the Grand Rapids Press, correct?
Yeah, I started there in 1990, and I worked till 2009. And then for several years, I continued to freelance theater reviews for them. And now they don't carry theater reviews anymore, so I write theater reviews for Encore Michigan. I was just down your way Tuesday night. I reviewed at the Barn Theater in Augusta. Hunchback of Notre Dame is running there now. And so
I'm going to reach into that area of your life just a little bit, just because it's fun. I read online that you've done meetings with your theater reviews. You've met Tony Curtis, Cary Grant, Bette Midler, James Earl Jones, Jerry Lewis, Molly Ringwald. My goodness. So what stories can you share with us? Just something fun.
Well, actually, that was my first book. Was writing about my interviews with famous folks, and that's Laughing for a Living. And you know, you do get the opportunity, and you do meet some really neat people. Tony Curtis, for instance, was quite a flirt, and it's almost embarrassing how much a flirt he is. You know, and I talk about that in Laughing for a Living, that he was a nice man and overly nice to everybody in the room, but the women, you know, he was a bit feely.
Probably during that time that he was a big star and active. At that time, men got away with a lot more.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. I'm sure you're right. And hopefully they don't get away with that kind of behavior anymore.
Then again, we're talking today when the Bill Cosby thing is going on. So I don't know.
But yeah, there evidently are some cases where men think that they should be able to have all access. And so that was one experience. Cary Grant hung up on me. I was talking to him on the phone and just for a few minutes, and he hung up. And so I called him right back, and he thought somebody was listening in.
Oh.
So they weren't on my end, maybe on his end. I've just had some wonderful, wonderful experiences. Molly Ringwald, she had broken her toe or something a few days before, and her toe was all bandaged up when I met her. She and Tony Curtis both, there's a phenomenon with performers that are interviewing and you have a photographer. Mm-hmm. They only dress from the waist up. From the waist down, they purposely dress as lousy as possible. They wear shorts, bare legs, because they know that photo is only going to get them from the waist up. So they dress very nice from the waist up and purposely contrast with something very casual on the lower half, just to say, I'm not really working. This is not really me.
How did you get to be a theater reviewer? Do you have a background in drama?
I actually did study theater in college and was very interested in theater, but I didn't think that a person could make a living in theater. I've since then found out that many people do. But I went into journalism thinking that was a better way to make a living. But then I discovered that, you know, my background in theater and my interest in theater, I go see it all the time, was something that would be valuable. I was the assistant features editor at the Grand Rapids Press. And so I was in charge of the entertainment department. And when Dave Nicolette, who had reviewed for us for 40 years, when he died, we were looking for somebody to fill his shoes. And I realized that the people we were interviewing were not well-versed in theater, and that what was going to happen is it was going to become a sidelight, and they were going to more seriously be interested in a more modern form of entertainment, television and concerts and not so much in theater. And theater was so critical to me that I said to Mike Lloyd, who was the managing editor at the press at the time, I said, I'll tell you what, let's, instead of looking for somebody to fill Dave Nicolette's shoes, I'll take his job and you hire somebody to fill my shoes. And so he went along with me. It was the best decision I ever made.
Well, nobody's going to do it better than you yourself.
Well, there's that, and it just was so enjoyable. I spent the last 10 years at the press laughing for a living. It was my job to have a good time, you know, and you can't beat that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've touched a little bit on your earlier books. At this point, I've only read your newest one, although after reading that, I may return for more. give us a taste of what else you've got out there. How many books have you got?
Well, there are the three mysteries, and it starts with Great News Town, which really is inspired by something that happened when I used to, I was an assistant news editor in Joliet, Illinois. Mm-hmm. For 8 years. And one of the things that happened there is we had a serial killer who terrorized that small town. It's a Chicago suburb, but it's a fairly small country town.
Yeah.
And we were just terrorized by every day somebody was getting killed. And when I saw what it could do to a town and then how the town ended up reacting and getting strong, I thought, this is a story. I've got to do this. I've got to do this as a book. And so that was always in the back of my mind that I needed to write that book. So that was the first one, Great News Town. And I make up a fictional town. I change Joliet into Jordan. Mm-hmm. Everything happens in the Jordan Daily News newsroom. And the same staff solves that problem. They find out who the serial killer is, which that's why it's fiction. We never really did solve the murder ourselves. We let the cops do that. But mm-hmm. And then that was followed by One Shoe Off, which is also inspired by something that really happened in Joliet. A newspaper editor disappeared in 1957. And so in my book, since my cast of characters is in the 1980s, I have them be haunted by this disappearance of this other journalist. And she returns and haunts them and gives them some clues that help them solve a current mystery. So it kind of compares two times, what happened in the 1950s versus what was happening in the 1980s.
So why mysteries, Sue? What is it about those? Or were you one of those girls like me who grew up reading Nancy Drew? Or how did you get interested
definitely.
In mysteries? Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely grew up reading Nancy Drew and Agatha Christie and P.T. James. I was Graston, I've read them all. And so I'm just definitely a very strong mystery fan.
Do you miss journalism?
Journalism has changed.
Yes.
And it's different, but I'm still connected in lots of ways. I'm not in the newsroom every day, but I'm connected to a lot of people who are journalists and appreciate what they're doing.
Well, I can't resist. I have to ask, since you're a longtime journalist and you just said journalism has changed, what are your thoughts on how a lot of people seem to look at reporters these days and different media, different newspapers? Do you still feel like journalism is healthy and that we're still getting the facts?
I really think that I guess I'm biased in that because I was in the newsroom, I've always thought that nobody cares more about the truth and about facts and about accuracy than the people in the newsroom.
Yeah.
And they really, really work for that. And I think that's still true. When I say it's changed, it's the method of delivery that's changed and the method of collection has changed. Those things have changed, but the journalists I know are still really committed to the truth and fairness. And fairness somehow goes beyond the truth because you can give facts but not give balance and not be fair. And the journalists I know work very hard at fairness as well as truth. And I think that still happens. The problem is it's very difficult for the reader, especially when we have so many different delivery methods now. It's hard for us as readers to choose wisely that the information we're getting is the accurate information. I'm very careful. I subscribe to the New York Times and the Washington Post and Christian Science Monitor. I have specific newspapers that I read because I trust them.
Mm-hmm.
And if I come across other stuff, I'm constantly going, now, wait a minute, what do they have to say? And you know, it's very hard because you'll see some exciting stories out there that you think, can that be true? And sometimes it is. and sometimes it's not.
Well, I think more than ever, we have to be careful about fake news. So it's good to talk about that and good to be aware of it and good to watch out for it because it can really change things.
Yes, that's true.
Anything that you'd like to add, Sue, that I haven't asked?
You know, I don't have any events scheduled right now. I do readings at area bookstores, you know, fairly frequently, but I don't have anything scheduled right now.
Okay.
So no, I do not have any events on my calendar that you'd be.
So if somebody wants to learn more about your books or to purchase them, where do we go?
Well, I would suggest my website, which is SueMerrillBooks.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Sue. It's been fun talking to you, and I think I'm going to look up some more of those mysteries.
Well, thank you, Zenta, for the work that you do. We really appreciate it.